This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Local residents say crowds of youngsters celebrating the start of school vacation began descending on the tavern on Saturday night.
That's Darren Taylor reporting on a mysterious death of 21 teenagers in a South African tavern. Details coming up. Also, Sudan recalls its ambassador to Addis Ababa after accusing Ethiopia of killing 7 of its soldiers. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. 61 years after his murder, the remains of Patrice Lumumba, an African nationalist and Pan-Africanist, is returning to Kinshasa, the capital of his homeland, the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Lumumba helped the DRC gain its independence from Belgium in 1960 and became its first prime minister. He was ousted just 5 months after he took office, and in January of 1961, soldiers reported to be under Belgian command killed Lumumba and 2 of his associates by firing squad. Later, the bodies were exhumed, chopped into pieces, and dissolved in sulfuric acid. The executioners admitted to keeping 2 of Lumumba's teeth and fingers as trophy. Only 1 tooth has been found. 61 years later, Belgian Prime Minister Alexander De Croo returned that tooth to Lumumba's family during a ceremony in Brussels. Croo said the government accepted moral responsibility for the African leader's death. Since the return last week, Lumumba's remains have been honored in ceremonies around the country. Early today, Eddie Isango from VOA's French to Africa service gave us an update on the ceremonies.
The remains of Lumumba has been welcomed in Congo. Everybody is involved. Let me tell you, from the government to the men of the streets, everybody is involved. Today on, from today, the government, the prime minister, decreed the national funerals, national mourning. We have 4 days for that, starting today. And you know, everybody knew Lumumba in Congo, the Republic Democratic of Congo, like the national heroes. Everybody know the story, and everybody has been waiting for this to happen, but now on, it's like the feeling is scattered. People are sometimes sad, mostly to remember how he was killed and what he was trying to do for the country by his speeches, and how he ended by being not only shot, killed, but by being cut by the killers and dissolved in acid.
On Wednesday, the remains will be exposed at the Prime Minister's office for a ceremony. Can you talk a little about that?
Lumumba was the first Prime Minister of the Democratic Republic of Congo. And this is what is done for any other Prime Minister that dies, even if the old, a former one. You know, in the what they call premature, the prime minister office, there is a building, but there is also a big garden where they've built all the statues for everybody who has been prime minister. So to honor him, they're going to bring the remains and expose that for a few hours, and then give him honors. Pay respect to the remains, and then it's going to be taken to the resting place.
So, Eddie, this is where is the final resting place for Lumumba's remains?
In Kinshasa, there was a place named Lumumba Place. Those who know Kinshasa will know that there is a a higher building that has never been finished, completed. It was designated to be the national TV building. But at this place, that is what Mobutu did. But after Mobutu, Laurent Désiré Kabila and others, they built a mausoleum, a statue, a big statue of Lumumba. And it's in this place that they built now a mausoleum. And they were going to place the tooth or the remains or the relics of his body at this place. It's a big place. There is, as I said, what they call in French, échangeur. So many roads coming across, and it's going to be in the middle of that.
That was Eddie Isengo from VOA's French to Africa service talking to me here in Washington. Mystery still surrounds the deaths of 21 teenagers in a tavern in the South African East Coast city of East London in the early hours of Sunday morning. Police in Eastern Cape Province say they're not yet in a position to confirm how the youngsters lost their lives, other than to say the deaths were not natural. Authorities have ruled out a stampede or crowd crush as the reason for the deaths and are looking into the possibility the victims ate, drank, or smoked something lethal. Darren Taylor has more.
Four children remain in intensive care in critical condition, with the victims being between 13 and 17 years of age. The incident shining a spotlight on underage drinking in South Africa. Liquor Traders Association chairperson Lucky Ntemane says many taverns in South African townships operate as laws unto themselves, and anyone with cash in pockets is welcome to drink alcohol, no matter their age.
The specific tavern in East London has been subject of many complaints in the past. The law enforcement officials in that particular area failed to act, and we believe that had they acted timely, this incident should have been prevented. But I don't think this is the time to point fingers. Taverns that are operating as it is need to comply with the laws. And we need to put pressure on government and law enforcement officials and certainly the liquor boards to say we cannot be using kids' gloves in dealing with non-compliance, because as we have seen now, lives are at the hands of liquor drinkers.
Local residents say crowds of youngsters celebrating the start of school vacation began descending on the tavern on Saturday night. Shortly after midnight, they told VOA, the few security guards at the bar lost control of the throng. Police often say they don't have the time and resources to deal with underage drinking, an offence they consider to be minor in comparison to the violent crime they have to deal with. Ntemane says the tragedy shows this attitude must change.
I tried to reach out to the tavern owner to understand what really happened. But from our initial assessment, we understand that this happened in the early hours of the morning, which then points to a non-compliance from the side of the trader. There were underage children in this space. We are extremely disappointed. This establishment must be closed.
The top provincial official from the ruling Africa National Congress, the ANC, Oscar Mabuyane, is calling for a nationwide crackdown on establishments that sell alcohol to people under the age of 18, the legal drinking age in South Africa.
Difficult to fathom exactly what has happened there. It's one of those issues that you feel like they could have been avoided. Young bodies lying around. It's a very bad thing. Very, very bad thing. We can't understand. It's a dark cloud over our province, a dark cloud over Buffalo City Metro Municipality. You can imagine in the area where this thing has happened, very struggling families, literally people who don't have anything.
Mabuyane doesn't want to speculate, but says most of the bodies he saw didn't appear to have visible injuries.
The experts are there. People are investigating, the police themselves. We don't want to say stampede or not, but we don't really see stampede in the upstairs, but people have died in upstairs. But we want to leave that to police to tell us exactly what has happened. I think the owner himself has come up to say he would be cooperating and would be willing to be assisted for himself as well. He doesn't know exactly what has happened. I think that investigation will be able to tell us, but also the post-mortem.
State pathologists hope to determine exact cause or causes of deaths within days. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Sudan has recalled its ambassador to Addis Ababa after having accused Ethiopia of killing 7 captive soldiers and 1 civilian. Yesterday, Sudan's government said it would respond to what it termed cowardly behavior. Reuters News reports that Ethiopia's government says the soldiers died fighting a militia and that Ethiopian troops were not involved. Tensions have risen in recent years over Al-Fashqa, a fertile border strip long cultivated by Ethiopian farmers but claimed by Sudan. The dispute has sparked sporadic deadly clashes between the two sides. The Al-Fashqa border strip is also close to Ethiopia's Tigray region, and tensions rose further after fighting erupted in Tigray in November 2020, sending tens of thousands of refugees fleeing into Sudan. The dispute feeds into wider tensions in the region, including over Ethiopia's controversial Blue Nile Dam. Egypt and Sudan have called for Ethiopia to slow the rate at which the dam is filled to ensure it does not affect the flow of water to their countries. The Zamfara state government in northwest Nigeria has urged residents, especially farmers, to arm themselves against bandits. Ibrahim Dosara, the state commissioner for information, said in Gasau, the capital, the government is willing to help farmers secure basic weapons to defend themselves. He says the government has approved the recruitment of 200 additional community protection guards in each of the 19 emirates in the state. Dosara spoke to reporter Mike Mbonye about the decision to assist farmers arm themselves.
Yes, you see, recently, after we have succeeded in curtailing the issue of banditry, there was a kind of upsurge of the activities of the bandits. And this is coming at a time when farmers are planning to go back to their farmlands for the rainy season. And as a result, government felt it necessary to direct people to possess legal weapons so that they can defend themselves, especially in their farmlands, against the bandits.
Do we have an idea of the number of farmers in Zamfara, and what does Zamfara farmers produce that feeds the nation?
Zamfara state is a population of farmers. Almost 85 or 95% of people of Zamfara state are farmers. And we produce large quantity of rice, large quantity of grains like sorghum, like guinea corn, like beans. We also produce cash crops like cotton, like groundnut, and other crops for export. So Zamfara state is a population that provides large quantity of food and cash crops to the Nigerian populace. And they contributed significantly in the provision of food security, I mean, across the country.
Well, the report said that the state government has called for the recruitment of 200 additional community protection guards in each of the 19 emirates to strengthen security across the state. Can you expatiate on this, sir?
Yes, it's just like Amotekun,
okay,
in the southern part of the country, where governors combined their forces to recruit the vigilante groups that will ensure security within the region. It is the same thing the Zamfara state government is doing, that initially we approved for the recruitment of 300 people in each of the 19 emirate councils. And now we saw the need, the reason to, I mean, increase the number to 500 in each of the emirates. And that is why we ordered for the recruitment of additional 200 community protection guards so that they will help in reinforcing the security operators in the state.
That was Ibrahim Dosara, the State Commissioner for Information in Nigeria's Zamfara State. He spoke by phone from the state capital, Gusau, with journalist Mike Mbonye. The U.S. Supreme Court decision to overturn its historic 1973 ruling on abortion rights has been received with mixed feelings in many African countries. While abortion is illegal in some countries, some women organizations fear the U.S. Supreme Court's decision might have repercussions for women and girls in Africa. Dr. Marlene Tamerman is chair of the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at Aga Khan University, Nairobi. She's also a board member of the Partnership for Maternal, Newborn and Child Health, the world's largest alliance for women's, children's and adolescent health and rights. Douglas Mpuga reached her by phone in Nairobi, Kenya, and began by asking her why she was concerned about the court's decision.
So my concern is mainly that the vulnerable women in the U.S. to start with, but also in other parts of the world, because some countries might be influenced by that decision and turn back the rights of the women and the health of the women. And in my experience, I'm a Belgian obstetrician gynecologist who has worked in many places in the world, mostly in Africa, and I have seen many women die in my hands because they were admitted in the hospital with the consequences of unsafe abortion. Some of them made it, others are dying. So I'm very concerned that exactly the vulnerable women in the U.S. and in other countries as well, that they will go for unsafe abortions with all the implications for their own health. And the women who are well off, the kind of higher classes, they always find a way to get their abortion done.
Given that abortion is illegal in many countries, including in Africa, what does this U.S. Supreme Court ruling mean for those countries where abortion rights are still in place?
Well, in some of the countries, most African countries, abortion is illegal, but there is also a trend, and there is the society in those countries who are asking their leadership, their government, their parliaments to change the laws. Now, with that court rule now in U.S., I think it will become more difficult to get the abortion decriminalized in those countries that are struggling with it currently.
So in your view, personally, and for the organization where you're a board member, what should be the next step? What should be done?
Well, we should respect the women's rights and the women's health. And we know that criminalizing abortion is not decreasing the number of abortions. On the contrary, those countries who have a good sexual education of their young people, those countries who have access to family planning and, if need be, to safe abortion, they are the best students in the world class, and they do best in terms of they have the lowest rates of abortion. It sounds by criminalizing abortion, you are not going to reduce the number of abortions. Absolutely not. You are only going to increase the number of dangerous abortions. And women will die and women will suffer. You are not going to decrease. And there is very good statistics on that. Look at the Guttmacher Institute. They will show that in those countries where it's criminalized, the abortion rates are even higher than in countries where it's legalized. But the women dying are much higher in those countries.
Dr. Marlene Tamerman is chair of the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at Aga Khan University, Nairobi. She's also a board member of the Partnership for Maternal, Newborn and Child Health. She spoke with Douglas Mpuga by phone from Nairobi, Kenya. As noted, the Guttmacher Institute, a reproductive health research institute in the United States, has reported that in sub-Saharan Africa, 43 nations ban or restrict abortion. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. And please note, we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There, you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. A World Health Organization independent committee of experts say the spread of monkeypox in a number of countries around the world is worrisome but does not constitute what the WHO calls a public health emergency of international concern. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
In early May, the World Health Organization was alerted to an outbreak of monkeypox in countries outside Africa, where this deadly disease has been circulating for decades. Since then, more than 3,200 confirmed cases and one death have been identified in more than 50 non-African countries. This has set alarm bells ringing, as until now, only sporadic cases of monkeypox have occurred outside Africa. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus calls the current outbreak an evolving health threat, noting the rapid spread of the disease into new countries and regions. He says the committee has agreed to reconvene another emergency meeting if appropriate. WHO spokesman Christian Lindemeyer tells VOA the committee has drawn up a list of factors that could trigger a reassessment of the event.
Evidence of an increase in the rate of growth of cases reported in the next 21 days, including significant spread to and within additional countries, or if we see an increase in endemic countries. So evidence also of increased severity or a change in the viral genome associated with or leading to enhanced transmissibility.
Monkeypox is a rare disease similar to smallpox. The virus causes rashes and flu-like symptoms. It is spread mainly through human contact with infected rodents, but sometimes can be spread through skin-to-skin contact with an infected person. The disease is mainly found in Central and West Africa. This year, WHO reports, there have been nearly 1,500 suspected cases of monkeypox and around 70 deaths, primarily in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Central African Republic, and Cameroon. Lindemeyer says cases of monkeypox have spread to the European region, to the Americas, as well as the Eastern Mediterranean and West Pacific regions.
At this point, it's mainly in the newer countries affecting a community of the LGBTQ plus community of men having sex with men. But in the endemic countries, we've seen also children and women infected a lot. There's deaths occurring in the weaker communities, in the weaker populations.
While questions regarding the monkeypox outbreak remain unresolved, WHO urges nations to remain vigilant and strengthen their ability to prevent transmission of the disease. The WHO expert committee advises countries to step up surveillance, improve diagnostics, and when appropriate, to use therapeutics and vaccines. It also recommends affected communities to implement public health measures, including contact tracing and isolation. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, Zainab Abdul Rahman, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.